Välkommen till Tysklandspodden, en podcast av Goethe-institutet i Sverige. Vi bjuder in spännande gäster för att prata om kultur, samhälle, idéer och mycket mer. Här kan du lära känna helt nya sidor av Tyskland. Jag heter Ylva Rathjen och jobbar på Goethe-institutet med kulturprogrammet. Och idag ska vi prata om klubbkultur. Nattlivet och den elektroniska musikscenen i Tyskland lockar många besökare från världen över. Musiker och DJs, inte minst ifrån Sverige. Men de senaste åren efter pandemin har varit tuffa och tagit hårt på många klubbar. Och i Tyskland har det pratats en hel del om klubbstäben, alltså klubbdöden. Flera klubbar har tvingats stänga eller kämpar för att överleva och till exempel ikoniska Watergate i Berlin stängde igen 2024. För gott, efter 22 år. Samtidigt har klubbscenen fortfarande en stark dragningskraft. Man tänker nytt för att locka besökare och nya trender dyker upp. Det finns ju nu en helt ny generation som också tar sig in på dansgolven. Är den tyska klubbhypen fortfarande intakt? Är scenen mitt i en kris eller bara en omvandling? Och vilka ställen borde vi känna till, förutom Berghain? So now I will switch into English, because joining me today from Berlin to talk about this is German culture journalist Christopher Cornels. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So one of your focuses as a journalist is the club scene, not only from a cultural perspective, but also from a societal and economical one. You have frequently written articles about this in newspapers such as Die Zeit, Berliner Zeitung, and the music magazine Groove, where you've also worked as an editor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could say that you've been covering the German club scene for some years. So I would like to start off by asking, what was the last club that you visited?
That's a tough question because I haven't been going out much. And actually, maybe we can talk about this later on, about the, because I belong to an older generation, I guess, by club culture standards. I'm in my late 30s now. And I haven't been going out so much in the past 5 years. What was the last one though? Well, frequently I've been going to About Blank in Berlin. I have been to a wonderful party at Backsteinboot in Berlin Spandau, very far out. That was last year though. And there's a couple of clubs that I still occasionally go to, like Ohm, for example, which is the smallest club in the ensemble.
Exactly.
It's the old battery room in the place that's called Kraftwerk, which also hosts Tresor. So it's like a separate small room that kind of belongs to Tresor, but hosts its own parties. And it's a very, very nice club. It's been open for, I think 15 years now. It had a different name back then when it opened. But yeah, it's a very beautiful place. One of the best sound systems in the entire town. And if anyone ever wants to see something that feels very intimate and has a great program, please go to Ohm.
Okay, that's a great tip. Well, it's funny that you say that you haven't been going out a lot, because I had to admit I haven't either. I can't really remember the last time I went out to go clubbing. I was at like a punk club in Stockholm, but that was more of a live show or a concert, a club. But I have been thinking about like taking the night train to Germany to go clubbing. Where do you think I should go?
Depends on which city you'd like to visit. Obviously, there is still plenty of places to go to in Berlin, even though, as you've mentioned in the intro, from what I understood with my very, very basic Swedish, we've heard that Watergate has closed, Schwutz, a queer institution in Berlin, has also closed, and Renate has also closed by the end of 2025. We've lost three major clubs in 1 year. It's similarly bleak in other cities, but I think the most hyped club in Germany aside from the usual ones in Berlin, would be Wuppertal's Open Ground, the club that has been founded by, amongst other people, Mark Ernestos of Hardwex and Basic Channel fame. I've never been there, and Wuppertal is really, it's a little far off. It's like outside of Cologne, 45 minutes by train or something. But it has been hailed as one of the best clubs that, I mean, everyone I spoke to has ever visited, if only for the sound system alone. So that would be huge. And I think there's still like a lot of cities in which like the club scene is very vibrant. Generally, I would always recommend like looking for the smaller cities that maybe are university cities that usually only have one real club, because the parties sometimes are just more fun, because, you know, like especially in Berlin, people are very blasé. Everything is very segmented. Like people know exactly where to go and what to expect. And there's very little mixing on a social level. And also, yeah, people just come there and do, well, clubbing is a sport in Berlin, for example, and in other places, it's more of like just a fun thing to do. And that really changes the energy. I've had some of my best raves outside of Berlin, just because it was, you know, people went to this one club that they have in the city and just give it 150% for 6 hours, because then everything will be over. Whereas in Berlin, it's like people come with like a huge duffel bag with like toothbrush and everything and a change of clothes inside because they know they're going to stay for like 20 hours. And that's how they kind of approach the whole club thing, which, I mean, is fine, obviously. But sometimes, you know, like that just means that like the energy is like just very, very different. So, yeah, Wuppertal, Open Ground, I guess that's a pretty famous club now. You've got some great ones in Munich, and in Dresden and Leipzig, Objekt Klein A and Axon N in Leipzig. And, but generally I would also say that, yeah, look for the smaller cities if they're on the train line from Stockholm to Germany. Maybe drop by, I don't know, for example, I'm regularly in Würzburg. They have a beautiful club here called Waldschenke Dornheim, and Trier has a wonderful club called Villa Vulla, and I've had amazing parties there. And yeah, let's not forget about the periphery.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess one aspect also by like going out, I think some of the best club nights I've had are also the ones where I haven't maybe expected so much. Like when you don't really know what you're going to expect, or when you get surprised. Exactly. I guess that's also
exactly.
Yeah. A nice part. So, what do you think? What is it that makes the German club scene and nightlife so unique? I mean, it draws a lot of people from all over the world. Big question, maybe, but
it's a very, very big question, because then we have to get very historical, I think. So when we're talking about the club scene in Germany, people usually like to talk about Berlin, even though that is incorrect on many levels. Already in the 80s, like Frankfurt, for example, had a very vibrant scene. And that is due to the American soldiers stationed near Frankfurt, for example, who brought music with them and who, just created a sort of influx of especially black music from the US that the people in Frankfurt were very receptive to. And so Frankfurt was like a very early hotspot, as well as Hamburg. We had Front, a very legendary queer club that started out as a sort of like, I guess, like it was mostly synth pop and then early house music. And it was the stomping ground for people like Wolfgang Tillmans as a photographer, who started out there, and DJs like Boris Dlugos and Klaus Stockhausen. And so it wasn't only Berlin, but especially Berlin became a focal point, or like, let's say a breeding ground rather, for, you know, the revolution, as it was called in the 90s, for very obvious reasons. Like, it was a very exciting time by the end of the 80s and the early 90s, with the city growing together suddenly through the reunification of Germany, and a lot of like just unused buildings that you could occupy. And you know, that's what clubs do. Like, clubs aren't being built, they occupy pre-existing spaces. Like Tresor, for example, is one of the oldest in Berlin. Just, you know, like, it was just some people like literally going into a vault near Potsdamer Platz and making it, turning the place into a club. So yeah, I think like there's like many different things that were happening all around Germany, many factors that played into why this music fell on such fertile soil. Yeah, so it's a really tough question to answer. I think in Berlin, it also, like, one beneficial factor was, like, we don't have a closing hour in Berlin. So you can party nonstop, which is not the same in other cities. And just generally, people were just really excited.
So looking back on the last couple of years, the situation has been really tough for clubs. Even some of the most established ones, like we've already mentioned, Watergate and Wilde Renate, you also mentioned in Berlin. And also the term Klubsterben, or which means like club death, kind of.
The dying death of clubs. Of clubs. Yeah.
The dying of clubs, yeah, has been used. And I mean, there's no denying that the pandemic played a huge role in this. And during the lockdown restrictions, the clubs had to close completely. So like when the clubs finally reopened, and I presume everybody hoped for a big recovery, what happened?
Well, yeah. So for 2 years, it was pretty much a stop and go, because as listeners will probably know, Germany handled the pandemic a little differently from Sweden. So there was this huge momentum in early 2022 when clubs could finally reopen. But it came with a lot of problems as well, because as people will also know, war started, which had a huge economic impact on pretty much everything. So we were dealing with an energy crisis in Germany. Inflation was soaring suddenly, and there was a lot of like general, I guess, social insecurity about like, okay, what's going on here? What's happening? So that was that kind of created a weird mix. And after 2 years of essentially nothing really happening, you know, like there was personnel missing. People's behavior had also changed, you know, like after 2 years of like basically spending every evening on the couch, like, you know, like going back to a club, like that was a strange experience for many, especially in a time of, such just uncertainty, I would say. So that created a sort of vicious circle for clubs. Everything got more expensive, but also less money than before came in. So, and we've been kind of dealing with that ever since, this vicious circle. While also, I think like there was like a sort of like subcultural conflict going on, because the other thing that happened during the pandemic is that people got really into club music and club culture, right? Throughout the 2010s, like club music had already been booming, but it got into hyperdrive thanks to whatever, like TikTok especially was like very instrumental in turning people onto club music. But they have never actually visited clubs, like the younger ones. So suddenly they were there and like, you know, came rolling in with their like, I don't know, like pseudo fetish gear and, you know, like a phone in hand. And the older generation was like, yeah, like you're like behaving like incorrectly. Sort of like, so there was this intergenerational conflict along like, yeah, behavioral issues. As well as, you know, like just taste. The younger generation was more into like very fast paced, like hands up sort of like trance music and the older generation had more of a, like, you know, like purist understanding. Mm. So that was a huge conflict between 2022 and I guess up until maybe 2024. I think it's like a little different now, but like still, yeah, like, so weird situation in general, let's put it like that.
Among a lot of things, I mean, there are a lot of factors, but one thing that you mentioned is this like change in audience behavior, and how older generations then choose to go out more selectively, which I also relate to.
And me I too, think, like I said,
And I've been blaming it on like turning 30, like during the post-pandemic, or just getting older.
Yeah.
But looking at this, I'm not sure. But why do you think, you mentioned some reasons, but like, why do you think that people choose to stay home?
Well, I mean, first of all, the economic factor is very crucial here, I guess, because, you know, like back in quote unquote my days, it was like 10 euros in the door and that was pretty much it. Like beer would be like 2.50 or whatever at best back then. Like I'm talking like late 2000s, early 2010s or whatever. And it gradually increased, of course. It like, inflation exploded kind like everything, you know. Nowadays going to a club can be very, very expensive. Like if you look at the big clubs, like sometimes it's like 30 euros for a night, which still is a good deal if you think about like, okay, you can potentially stay for like 20 hours, so like that's like what, like €1.50 per hour. Like that's an okay deal. But nevertheless, like it's a, like it creates a sort of like threshold for many people. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, you know, for an quote unquote older generation like me, like I said, I'm 38 now. So I have this like been there, done that sort of feeling where I'm like, you know, like I've been going out so much in my 20s that like I don't really feel like it's like that exciting anymore. So like when in 2020, like everything came to a grinding halt for essentially 2 years, I was like, okay, yeah, this is actually fine, you know? Yeah, people having lost interest in the actual experience when it comes to the older generations, or just being more selective, like, you know, being more conscious about like where to go and how to spend their time and money. And whereas like with the younger generation, I think it's a lot about that they got used to, you know, in the summer, they would go to like illegal open airs instead of a club because like clubs weren't open, obviously. So they never really had like, they never really developed this like sort of like emotional connection, you could maybe say, to clubs that I did, for example. Like there are some places that, you know, like just when I come into the door, I feel like, okay, like this is like a sort of second home for me. And I think it's not
like the
really
venue
the
in itself.
Exactly. And I think that kind of ties into the whole Clubsterben sort of thing, like the Club Döden, the dying of clubs, that these places are under threat. One of the issues is that there's a younger generation that doesn't relate to clubs as much as previous generations did, just because of the situation in which they kind of were socialized in club culture more generally. And I think that's also a factor for that.
But you mentioned like the older generation choosing more selectively, maybe the younger generation also.
Well, sure.
But what do you think that they choose then? I mean, what do they value when they go out? I can imagine that when you shoot more selectively, I mean, you think a lot more about.
I think previously, like pre-pandemic, it was more about where to go. And nowadays, it's more about whom to follow. Because what we've seen, especially in the past 5 years, is that the attention has sort of shifted from stationary clubs to mobile collectives, like just DJ crews, you could essentially say, or you would have said, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, but like collective became such a overused term since then. So I think especially younger people pay more attention to what like certain DJs or like groups of people are doing, who are hopping from one club to another, who are also maybe active on an international level. And it's more about following these brands, you could say, than actually going to a club, because, you know, like a club is in a way, a club is boring. It's just a building, right? Whereas, you know, people are dynamic, they change. So I think that's...
Does it also include organizers like DJ crews and also like the organizers of the clubs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the DJ crews are essentially also promoters and organizers. So that's the whole thing, I would say. Like, just like if you think about, like, for example, I mean, one of the most internationally famous collectives or brands would be Keine Musik, for example. Technically, I guess they are also like their own organizers. You've got, on a more underground level, or like, let's say, mainstream adjacent, you've got Herrensauna, who got really, really famous in the past, I guess, like 12 years or something. And it used to be like a very male gay centric party in the very beginning, and it took place in a club beneath another club that was really it wasn't exactly sanitary down there, let's put it like that. So that's one example of a brand that has established itself, that, you know, for I think especially younger people is just more interesting, because a lot more is happening. They're going places, there's actual people involved, you know, like with like regular clubs, like you never see people, like it's just like a building essentially, right?
So maybe I should have phrased my question differently also, like not where should I go, but who should I look into? So, like, you talked about this new generation entering the scene, like, a follow-up question is, hasn't that always been an issue, like, when the new generation comes in and enters the scene, that there are tensions between, the older and the younger ones?
Yeah, sure. And that's how culture develops, and that's usually a good thing. It's like, just like an injection of fresh blood. But I think in this particular case, due to this standstill for 2 years, we were dealing with people who came back to the clubs after, you know, like a sort of like, 2 year break, and try like really expecting to have like the same experience as they did back then. And they met people who had never been to a club and just came with their very own ideas of how you would behave in a club. And so that created like a lot of friction, where usually I think like this like change of the guards, like of the different generations, is just a gradual and maybe not as like obvious process that's happening. So I think that was like a real, that was the most crucial factor, just like that 2 years of like nothing happening at all. And the which made the a changeover so very visible and very noticeable. Also, musically speaking, there was this trend of, like, they called it TikTok trends.
Yeah, I've read about this. I wanted to ask you, actually. Can you explain what it is?
So something that happened on TikTok, because it made a lot of sense on the platform, was like essentially hard trance remixes of, or edits of, late 90s to early 2000s R&B music. So like you had like Ciara or whatever, like pitched up vocal underneath, you know, like a sort of like very like just like hard and very upbeat sort of like groove, you know, for the purists, that didn't make a lot of sense. I couldn't relate as well, because for me it was very weird, because it just kind of combined like two things that I already knew from the 90s. So like that was like detrimental to my understanding of what, you know, progress sounds like. I also had a hard time like dealing with that. That moment is over, though. That moment, I think, is over. There is still like a lot of like DJs who kind of flirt with that sort of thing. Like Marlon Hofstadt, for example, has built a career around it. Or like people like DJ Heartstring or Narciss. those folks, they still kind of do that, I guess. But also the younger generation has moved on to, for example, like hard techno, but also hard groove saw a sort of revival in recent years. So it's been a little, it's gotten a little bit more stripped down, I would say. It's not as, you know, overdriven anymore, but like that was sort of the music that suddenly came in, and like a lot of the old, like a lot of the people from the old guard just really hated it. It was a major conflict, whereas before, in, you know, like back in the old days, like these things sort of changed over time. They changed gradually,
organically.
Yeah,
I can imagine also when like when club music or music that is supposed to be played at clubs develops or trends on a platform like TikTok, of course it sounds differently because it's built to be like short and not to be built up for a longer time. So the last decades, the German club scene has really like set the standard also worldwide, but there has been and also are quite some challenges. How would you describe the current state of the scene? Like, is the hype still intact?
That is a very good question. Because I think the picture that you get is very ambiguous. So if you look internationally, you've got like things like the IMS Business Report, that is a report on the sort of like economic aspects of club culture that is being published annually. And the last one said or estimated the market value of the international club scene to be $13 billion, which is a huge sum. And like 50% of that pretty much comes from live events or like just events in general, which sounds great, right? Like that is like a very bullish sort of estimate.
Yeah.
But if you're actually talking to people on the ground, it's different. What we see is sort of like bifurcation in a sense. Like the bigger ones get even bigger, whereas the smaller ones struggle a lot more. So like there's this sort of like two-tier system, essentially. Those who do well do really well, and those who do okay-ish to not very great do worse, essentially. And I think that is very worrisome because it threatens the very foundations of club culture, because, you know, like it's the small clubs that breed new talents, the stars of tomorrow, you could say. And so this is under threat, and so is cultural diversity more generally, I would say.
Yeah, like how is it affecting the subcultures, for example, or like niche genres?
Well, yeah, so we've talked about Clubsterben before, and the thing is, like I said, there's more attention being paid to free-floating collectives, but also they need to have spaces in which to throw their parties. And the more clubs are, in fact, dying, and the year 2025 has been a year in which we've definitely seen more clubs die than being born, the less places they have, the harder it will get for them to really develop and like grow, both like on a, you know, artistic level as well as you could say businesses maybe. So yeah, which is why the whole thing is very, I would say, yeah, ambiguous. Who knows? Who knows? But at the moment, I think, yeah, like I think the hype is waning. It's withering away.
Looking ahead, well, you've said now that you think the hype is like kind of, fading, maybe. What do you think the scene will look like in, like, let's say 5 years?
Okay, let's see. So I think what we will inevitably see is a lot of clubs closing in the next few years. That is definitely going to happen for a variety of reasons. We will also see new ones being opened. Like, that's also going to happen. but I think fewer ones, and I think they will look different from what we're used to from clubs. We've seen already that a lot of clubs kind of try to adapt to the new reality of, like I said, everything is more expensive, but less money is getting in through the door, by kind of changing their programs, by also trying to, you know, like create new streams of revenue by becoming more like community centers, you could say, or like cultural hubs. So we will see more of that. There are some examples in Berlin, for example, that follow a sort of bar slash restaurant by day and the evening, club at night sort of formula. And I think we will see more of that. Maybe we will see more temporary spaces pop up wherever there's room for that. But I think, you know, it is highly unlikely that a second Berghain will open in Berlin or pretty much anywhere else within the next 5 years. Like a club of that scale with that sort of like gravitas is not something that I would expect to open. Yeah, like I said, the attention has shifted towards collectives. I think we will also see more of that, more people turning themselves into international brands, which is something that I feel very conflicted about, because it doesn't really align with my personal values, you could say. But also, maybe...
Why? Can you explain?
Well, I guess I am just idealistically and maybe naively subscribe to the idea of an underground of like small scale communities, where it's about, you know, like mutual appreciation and less about, you know, like making money. But like I said, like with the hype now being in decline, maybe that's also a good thing. Maybe the scene can shrink a little, return to the underground,
also
reform
a little.
Also give
some space to other players, maybe.
Right, exactly, yeah. So that could also happen ideally.
Yeah. If you would just like very shortly say a couple of things that you hope for, what your hopes are for the scene, what would that be?
I would hope for politicians taking this issue seriously, taking these spaces seriously as spaces that really contribute something to cultural and thus social life, that offer, you know, alternative realities in the most positive of senses, and that these places need to be supported, especially in regions where there isn't much culture or even less alternative culture. And I would hope for more political support, either through legislation or through funding. I would hope that, you know, people like myself getting up from the couch again and going to a club more often, and just getting immersed into something that once was like very, very important in my life. And just generally, yeah, like I said, I think I wouldn't mind things getting a little bit more underground and people focusing again on, you know, the community next door instead of like what they conceive as a community on whatever Instagram or TikTok. Just like getting out there, like trying to make connections in real life. Like I sound like a boomer, but it's
we should have a Gen Z person here just to
probably but I but I think one yeah maybe yeah one issue I think is that, you know, like so much about club culture is being communicated and negotiated online these days, but it's inherently a real life experience. And that's where the conversation should take place a lot more often, I would say.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today from Berlin, culture journalist Christopher Kornitz.
Thank you.
Följ Tysklandspodden i din poddapp så att du inte missar nästa avsnitt. Jag heter Ylva Ratjen. Tack för idag. Tysklandspodden är en podcast av Goethe-institutet i Sverige. Produktion och redaktion Ylva Ratjen, Sonja Leister och Judith Mirschberger.